Welcome to Design in Good Company, your go-to podcast for where creativity, community, and values converge. Here at Four Kitchens, we're not just about making great designs. We're about making designs that do great things. Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of Design in Good Company. I'm your host, Randy Dean Ost, and I have my co-host here with me, Broderick Lothringer, and we're going to talk this season about design, we're going to talk about fostering collaboration, and we're going to be talking about how we can do all of this in alignment with our personal values and making sure that, you know, the world is as we want it to be, or at least we're comfortable with what we're doing. So, Broderick, are you comfortable with this podcast? Are you comfortable with what we're doing here?
I'm pretty comfortable. I film in my basement, so it's a little cold down here today. Where I film from, we're filming in February. This podcast isn't releasing in February, but it is February. It's cold, but I think it's important we let the audience know why we're doing it. You had the idea for the show. How'd that come about? Why does this show even exist?
Well, Broderick, the reason that this show exists is I've been creative director and in leadership positions for a long time, and the people who are on my teams always benefit from my leadership. I know that sounds terrible and I'm great. One of my personal philosophies is to make the world a better place in large and small ways. And I hope that through this podcast that I'll make the world a better place by helping people with, you know, with design and being able to collaborate better and, you know, live within their values and understand what they're doing. So I'm hoping that in this podcast that I'm able to learn, you know, as well as teach.
So when you talk to me about doing this podcast and I said, well, what's the point? You're like, we really want to foster collaboration. Like, what does that mean? Like, I don't really know, but I just know I want to get a group together, maybe even go live and find out what's working, what's not working. And that's totally up my alley. It's saying, yeah, maybe we do know a lot more than the average bear just by the proximity of all these other people who've learned things that have taught us things. But the fact is, you're kind of taking that humble approach to say there's still so much more yet to learn, and we can all accelerate our growth if we just take a step back and say, look, we're not above you. We're not fans. We have listeners. Maybe we have listeners, but really we have a community, and that's what we're looking to build on this show. So when you invited me, say, would you want to help be a part of that? It was absolute yes. And so what I want to note for yourself is, I do, in my mind, see you as an expert, especially in the design space. But for yourself, where do you see yourself on that, right? It's kind of like a bell curve, they say. There's the beginning of knowledge where you know nothing and you're up here. And there's that bottom where a lot of people exist, where they see themselves or they realize, oh, I don't really know a whole lot. And then there's the people on the other side where you are an expert. You know more than anyone else in this space. They're really, your cup actually is full. There's not a whole lot left to learn. Where do you see yourself?
It's really interesting. I view myself in this process as I am enough of an expert to realize that expertise is something that is kind of ever blossoming. There are always new things to learn. There's always a return to basics too. I've seen a lot of people, whenever they get to a certain level of expertise, that they don't return to the basics, to the fundamentals. And they believe that the wisdom that got them to where they are, they just work from where they are instead of revisiting that. For instance, you know, having conversations about how to approach something, it's we want to take a goals approach because, you know, writing goals is always really good. Well, it's not always really good. Sometimes you just have to get a thing done. I know enough that I want to contribute to other people, but I also know that I have to listen to others because I might be reminded of those fundamentals. I might be reminded or learn new things from what other people say. I get so inspired by going to conferences and hearing other people speak. And it doesn't even have to be a design or UX conference. Any conference where people are speaking on their area of interest or expertise, I love it because I love seeing people geek out over what they love, even if I don't understand it. Like I worked at the University of Pittsburgh for a number of years, and they always have speakers coming in, and I would go see many of them just because I wanted to see, like, you know, like, oh, let's see this guy nerd out on corporate law. A lot of people have very inflated senses of what certain titles mean. Like if you're a UX strategist, or if you're a designer, senior designer, or product designer, you know, a lot of people have this fear that they're not good enough for their role because they see other people's expertise. And like, that's something that I want to try with this podcast to deflate, is to like remove that imposter syndrome, because like we all have different experiences and we're all learning as we go along. I don't know if you see a lot of imposter, or if you have any like imposter syndrome. I've had it from time to time.
Whenever I have to do something, especially when it's brand new, there's that feeling of, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. Who the heck am I? And reminding myself, no, there's people that believe in you for a reason. So for me, it's that level of responsibility to those individuals to say, well, they believe in you, so you got to follow through and do this thing and be confident in doing it. And even starting a new podcast like this, I've never been of a podcast where we're not really trying to create a business page. We're trying to create a business group. We're trying to bring on, instead of influencers every week to talk about how great they are, just everyday people who've got awesome experiences that we can highlight as time goes on. I mean, yeah, the first few episodes, it's just us talking, but we'll have a form. You want to come on the show, tell us why. Right? We're going to have a schedule, a link. Like, you can tell us why you want to be on this thing. We want to highlight your voice. And I think that's so cool and so exciting. But more often than not, I've learned, just go do it. Just try it. And you got to believe enough in yourself that even if it fails, so what? We'll find a way to make something work out of this. And for me, a big part of this show as well that you mentioned in the beginning, before foster collaboration, you use the word inspire. Doing something new and paving the way for other people. I mean, even though it's not new for podcasting, but it's new for me, this whole collaborative approach that we're talking about here. It's inspiring for me to go out and do something and test and push boundaries. And when I think of the word inspiration, I think of a lot of different chefs that I follow. Now, I'm not a chef myself, but I get inspired watching those people always thinking of new ways to push themselves and create something that they can deliver to a customer that is just changes the restaurant game for them, right? So for yourself, when you look for ways to be inspired, what do you look to?
You know, inspiration is one of those things that comes from a lot of different places. I think one of the most important places that it comes from is boredom. I really think that, you know, sitting or walking, being in nature, going for a long walk, like not having a constant input really helps your brain kind of like go through things. Like I swim in the mornings, and whenever I swim, like I can't have headphones to listen to an audiobook. So my brain ends up kind of going while I swim, and I end up like processing things and coming up with ideas for things. Like I've got like a whole like list of topic ideas for the podcast from like, you know, letting my brain sit idle. And I think that that's like the first place to kind of look. I think the second place to look for inspiration is to cast a wide net of interests, you know, and that because like whenever you look to chefs, like you mentioned, when you like go to a Star Wars convention, or I would prefer Star Trek, but we can have that argument later. You know, or like reading books, you know, whatever genre of books you like, nonfiction, fiction, speculative fiction, romance, whatever, you know, the broader base you have, the more inputs that you have to draw from, and the more you're able to kind of fill out what you're doing. Because when you stay focused in one area, what really ends up happening is you kind of like start grinding into grooves where everything kind of starts to like play out the same way because you only have the limited set of inputs that you have. Like when you're looking for design inspiration, you know, like looking at Dribbble is great. Dribbble's got a lot of really awesome stuff on it, but you should also look at other things. There's a series of Starship illustrations that I love where an artist said, like, listen, if you need to create like Starship designs, one of the best things that you can do is just open up your kitchen and start pulling stuff out and basing the ships on it. And so like, it's a series of like illustrations that like, it's obviously a can opener, but at the same time, it's not obviously a can opener if you like didn't see the can opener picture that was taken with it. And so like, you know, it makes you start to think like you can take inspiration from a lot of these kind of like different places to fill in your imagination. And so like, for me, like those are the two biggest places to find inspiration: boredom, and like casting a wide net of interests so that you have a lot to draw from. And those two things are fairly universal.
I mentioned earlier that I love looking at YouTube videos of different chefs. There's a guy named Marco Pierre White who actually Gordon Ramsay trained under, and he, something I really appreciate about him is, instead of making these really complex, these complicated dishes with all these ingredients that you're like, where are you going to, especially if you live in some random small town, you're not going to find all this stuff. And the Marco Pierre White, he doesn't take that approach. Instead, he'll make something incredibly simple, like scrambled eggs, but he will fundamentally change how they're made. For most people. So a lot of people, when they make scrambled eggs, you get the stove on hot and you throw the eggs in there and you scramble them and they're done, right? That's it. That's scrambled eggs. He says, easy peasy. Yep. Easy peasy. His whole method is, if your hand can't handle the heat of the pan, then it's too hot. And so what you need to be doing is constantly, it can take 20, 30 minutes. You're slowly turning those eggs and just, you know, with your, whatever you've got, just that scrambling them forever. And I remember at one point I saw how they're the texture by the time they're done was completely different. I'm like, that takes a lot of time, but I'm going to do it one of these days. And so I did. And it was the best scrambled eggs I've ever had. And so this chef, his one ingredient was eggs, and he made it taste completely different, and they were so much better. Now, the ROI for your time, especially if you're like, you know, my wife trying to feed a few kids in the morning, like that's just not practical. It's not happening. But
yeah,
I love when there are people who put something together and it's something incredibly simple and they change the way you think of something. There's a shameless plug here for Kitchens. We have this amazing podcast called The Future of Content, hosted by Todd Rosten-Kirk. It was actually the first podcast I ever produced outside of financial services. And jumping onto that show, he brings on content creators, thought leaders, really people who just do something unique every other week in a variety of industries. Now, a lot of folks would say, oh, that's not great, especially the podcast. Find your niche. Find your niche. Stay in your lane and don't pivot. It's like a slingshot. And this podcast, I thought, was so fundamentally amazing because it's breaking that rule, but it really teaches people inspiration comes from anywhere, at any moment. And I learned out of this podcast, I don't even know if I've told Todd this yet, that one of the best ways to bring new ideas to your industry, go to a different industry. Go to a Star Wars conference, a Star Trek conference. Oh, you want to learn something great for financial services, go to a healthcare event. Go to these different things and you will find people doing different practices that you can bring into a different space where if everyone who's, let's say they're content marketing agencies or whatever, and all they do is look into financial services, it's a very limited scope. And so taking the time, as you had mentioned earlier, to pull yourself away and think through fundamentally, great example, well, that people use in content marketing for podcast promotion is an audiogram. Well, what is an audiogram? Ask yourself that question. Take the time to go on a walk and say, why are we doing what we're doing? And asking those questions if you can fundamentally just break down what it is you're trying to create, then you can say, well, an audiogram, really all it is this soundbite from a podcast. And just we're uploading it with maybe a waveform. And then that rule doesn't even exist to what an audiogram truly is. Oh, so it's really just this sound clip with some text. Well, if that's all the rules are that apply to what an audiogram is, now you have the creative freedom to do a whole lot that get people to stop scrolling and stop thinking through the lens of, well, this is what everyone else is expecting. No, make something new and inspire people and get them to stop scrolling on their LinkedIns, Facebook, Instagram, wherever they are. And so when we're talking about, especially in the design space, something I'm so excited to talk about on this show is AI. And we've recorded a few episodes. We haven't talked about it yet. But the design landscape is going to change as people stop looking to other creators for inspiration and they start going to AI for inspiration. People are going to start inputting prompts into these things to kick off and say, give me something that looks like this. And that will get them started to doing, you know, what they want to do. So have you used that? Have you used Midjourney, DALL-E, any of those things to kick off some design inspiration? And if so, where do you think it's great? And what limitations do you think exist?
Oh my goodness. AI is one of those things.
Not a loaded question at all.
No, absolutely not. And you know, right now, AI, there's a lot of great tools for using AI and like needing to like slow down and figure it out is, I don't know, like I just approach AI as a playground and I try to figure out like, what can I do with it? So with Midjourney, I've used Midjourney a lot for both for work and for personal. And for work, I've used it to generate both placeholder images for visual designs, because then I can kind of art direct exactly what like, you know, placeholder image I want. Like if I want like two people leaning over a third person, you know, in a certain way, I can try and get Midjourney to give me what I need. And I've also used it for like, blog images on the emulsify.info site. Emulsify being a project where we connect, Figma files to code to more easily like create Drupal sites. It's really awesome. We'll probably talk about it in a future episode, but a lot of the blog posts have AI generated art and it's really nice and it's really easy. I also have been using ChatGPT for a lot of tasks. I've taken ChatGPT and whenever I'm heavily involved in the sales process for our team, and when an RFP comes in that we need to like evaluate and figure out what questions to ask and things like that, I read the RFP and I do like my usual work with it. Like I've got a series of questions that I go through and ask. Maybe that's another topic for a future one. But then what I will do is I will turn that RFP into a PDF and upload that into ChatGPT's PDF reader. And then I'll start asking it questions. Some of them are the same questions that like I was asking myself as I went through, but I want to get a different perspective on it. Like I use ChatGPT like it is a teaching assistant or an intern who like can do some work, but you can't trust that work. Not to say that interns and teaching assistants can't be trusted, but you know what I mean?
Don't trust them.
Nope. And so like, you know, I'll be able to say like, you know, like what are the important things, you know, in this RFP? What, you know, basically like just asking questions. And then I can also use that to write responses too. Like, you know, I can take and put in, you know, like, you know, what I think of the RFP, what I think the response should be, and like based on that RFP and what I've entered, write me a document in this format, and I give them the format. And like that's a great like lift, a great start to like responding to these things. I then go in and edit the document to make it more my voice and, you know, to make it, you know, accurate. Because you can't assume that anything's working correctly with AI, at least with generative AI. And so, so I'm doing that. I'm also, right now exploring ways that we can create GPTs with data that we have to make our work easier. Like we do a lot of content work, a lot of content strategy, and, you know, we provide our clients with content strategy, like core content strategy statements and documentation on how to use it, how to, you know, evaluate things. And what I really want to do is get to the point where we're actually providing a custom GPT for our clients based on that work so that our clients can make use of it. So like there's so much going on with AI. And then on top of it, sorry, I'm super excited. On top of that, there's, I know I'm talking for a long time, but this is a great topic. There's a website called Relume, R-E-L-U-M-E, that has a like an AI wireframe builder. Like you tell it what kind of site it is, and you tell it how many pages you need, and it will create a sitemap and wireframe from that with suggested sections that you can then go in and modify with AI further, like go to a specific page and tell it to regenerate it a couple of times, or, you know, what have you. And then that can connect up via AI to their component library, which creates wireframes from those content sections with like fake placeholder copy. And then that those wireframes can be connected up to their styled components in Webflow. Meaning that like you could go through this entire process pretty quickly, and have like a designed site based on like AI very quickly. Now, would you want that? No, but the savings in time and ideation and like, you know, refining, like it really, it's amazing stuff. They, Relume is working on a React library, which is exciting because like, you know, we don't do a whole lot in Webflow. You know, but I'm trying to stay abreast of what's going on because like, I mean, that's awesome.
One of my favorite questions that people ask on podcast interviews is, what's the future of AI? And actually, funnily enough, there's one person on, again, plugging here because I am a very big fan, but Four Kitchens, the Future of Content, the podcast that just went out was featured someone named Polly M. Allen. Go listen. She was part of the Amazon Alexa project when it was new and really does have a good look with past, present, and future of AI. Way better of a podcast than I've heard anyone else talk about with it. I actually did jump onto a podcast recently with the former chief economist from JP Morgan, and he's working with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar right now on, it's not just a podcast, it's more of like, it's some sort of, I don't even fully know what the scope of the project is. So I'm doing a really bad job plugging what that actually is. But what they're doing is they've cloned Kareem's voice. And so I know it's some sort of educational resource for his nonprofit that they're running. But I thought that was pretty interesting that I'm like, wow, you guys brought him in, got into a studio. You have all of these pieces that you need from him. And he said, well, instead of bringing me in for all this time and my time costs this, let's just do an hour-long session and then you can have my voice forever, in perpetuity. And I know James Earl Jones did something similar where he licensed his voice for Darth Vader for Disney to use for basically forever. And so they cloned it. And I think I'm a really bad Star Wars fan. I actually like Star Wars. I don't love Star Wars. I just think it's a fun community. But I think James Earl Jones has passed away now, if I'm not mistaken. Totally something a real Star Wars fan should know.
I'm not sure
if Darth Vader is actually alive or not. So please, people in the comments, don't hate me for being like a fake Star Wars fan. But anyway, even if he is, the fact that Disney can say, great, we have a contract, we can use this for forever now, I'm pretty sure he's passed away. But that's okay. You know what? I'm going to Google it.
You Google it. Well, you Google it. This is a topic that brings, I don't know. On one hand, it has the potential to be good, like cloning someone's voice and also their appearance, because AI is going to continue to get better at like, you know, like, was it the fifth Indiana Jones movie?
Where they age
him and everything. You know, it's just like, that's just going to continue to get better. And our current crop of actors and actresses, I hope you like them because they're probably going to be around forever.
A long time. Yeah, well, it's like, and that's, James Earl Jones is still alive. So everyone, please don't hate me too much. But the point is, even as you just mentioned, as people pass away or as people, even as they get out of Hollywood, the fact is we can still use their likeness, as hopefully they've signed off onto it. There are some recent examples where Hollywood has been pulling people's likeness without permission. So that's its own podcast episode. We can go into a lot of ethical ramifications of AI on another episode. But the point is that we're trying to get into, the moment you're comfortable in the design space, the artistic space, well, human innovation, human creativity, something's going to happen that's going to challenge the norm. And hopefully you don't go the way of Blockbuster and you just disappear and say, all right, well, unless you want to ride off into the sunset and never change. But if you're excited about innovation, if you're excited about change, and if you want a community of people who are going to encourage and challenge you, that's what we're trying to create here. So please go to the LinkedIn group, join it. This is Design in Good Company. I'm Broderick Lothringer, joined by the Randy Dean Ost, the main host of this show. We're so excited. Thank you for tuning in. We're going to be back with a bunch of other great topics this season. We're so excited you're here. And if you have questions for us, look, if you're listening to the podcast, well, okay, go to the description. There's links in there where you can find out more information about the show. And if you're watching on YouTube, well, subscribe. We appreciate you being here. And we look forward to having you back for another episode of Design and Good Company. See you then.
Thank you for tuning in to Design and Good Company. You can help keep this conversation going by connecting with our LinkedIn group or sharing this podcast with your friends. From Four Kitchens, thank you for listening, and see you in our next episode.